Welcome back to the National Defense. It's Randy Miller. And Matt, you know, there's some powerful reporting going on at CBS News. Of course, we've had Nora O'Donnell on several times, and she has done such great work with the military and with veterans, exploring benefits and just lots of great things that have come to pass because of those reports. And Jim Axelrod, chief investigative correspondent for CBS News, has done a series of stories that will just absolutely blow your mind. I mean, he interviewed a Seattle Air Force vet, served time in Leavenworth prison for being gay, and still carries a criminal record. Jim joins us here in the National Defense. Jim, how are you?
Fine, thank you. Randy, thank you so much for having us.
Man, I've been doing this show for a little over 10 years. I have never heard of this. And we talk to veterans every single day. And this is, it's an incredible, it's ridiculous, number one. But this is a part of the investigative unit's Dishonored series about gay and lesbian service members who were denied an honorable discharge because of their sexual orientation. Jim, how did this story come to you?
I got to tell you, Randy, I've been at CBS. I share your outrage. Like, I share that sense of, wait a minute, right? Like,
this yeah, right.
And so I've been at CBS for 27 years. You know, I've been in broadcast journalism for 34 years. And I have never had that feeling that you just sort of articulated.
Right.
I've never had it before of just, it's beyond being stunned. It's like, of course, we all run into things that leave you just shaking your head. This is a sort of a different order. And, I was sort of trying to figure out the best way to put it in my introduction to our piece last week when we were on CBS Mornings. And it occurred to me that, you know, we had been doing this sort of series that you alluded to that escalates the consequence that LGBTQ service, that vets faced over the course of their experiences. And we, you know, we go from having discharges that need to be upgraded to benefits that right. are not accessible. And then all of a sudden I realized he wasn't just punished by, you know, he didn't just have his benefits denied. This guy, Steve Morose, was put in prison for being gay. No other way that you could begin to articulate what happened.
Right. It 11 years. Is that right?
Well, he faced 17 years, the possibility of 17 years. He had 5 counts of consensual sodomy, which carried three years apiece on 5 counts. And then the potential for 2 other charges of conduct of becoming an officer. These other people have faced similar situations, and they'll just plead guilty, and the understanding will be you'll be dishonorably discharged or other than honorably discharged, and that will be that. In fact, that's sort of what his lawyer essentially told him to do. He pled, and of course they had brought in some hardline judge, that sort of threw the book at him. He only ended up with a 2-year term, and he did a year and a half, but you know, the Army has sort of one Fort Leavenworth, and this yeah. is where he was. And, you know, as he said to me, he was running into murderers and rapists and people in there for life. And what had he done?
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Yes. And this is a guy that served our country. I mean,
my goodness. He was an officer in the Air Force. His father had been an Air Force Master Sergeant, and he's not alone. See, that's the thing,
yeah.
Randy.
Yeah, yeah. This is
down on this.
This is not just the one incident of this happening. And when I first saw your piece, Jim, we're talking to Jim Axelrod here on the National Defense from CBS News. But when I first saw it, I thought, well, boy, that's a weird and rare occurrence. But then yeah. it's not.
Yes, again. Well, you know, there's something like 14,000. Service members, vets, who were discharged during prior to the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So in other words, when it was implemented to when it was repealed, and it was repealed, it'll be 12 years ago in September, right? And so it was in that time, there were about 14,000 who were discharged and they were done so paying some sort of price. And only 1,000 or so have had their cases reviewed and dealt with in an appropriate manner. So there's still thousands of people just from that one session. But the best estimate since World War II to the present of vets who have been persecuted for their sexuality. And again, language is important here, but there's no other way to put it.
Right.
Veterans who are persecuted for their sexuality. The thinking is there's probably 100,000 since World War II. And I asked this expert, Rachel Van Lanningham, who spent more than 20 years in the Air Force herself. She's a lawyer, knows this stuff backwards and forward. And she said, the military doesn't know how many exactly the number is. They don't want to know. They could know that the information exists. And of course, if it became a priority with the military, they could know. They don't want to know. So they have a flawed, fundamentally flawed policy of dealing with this. And so far, there is little will to actually do something. Randy, one last thing here. The question that I have been asking all along our reporting, we asked it of, we asked it of Leon Panetta. We've asked it of all kinds of people who paid the price. We've asked experts. Is the Pentagon's refusal to deal with the lingering effects, is it lingering homophobia or bureaucratic inertia?
It's a great question.
That's what I need to understand.
Great question. And I sensed your frustration over the, you can't even get a call back from the Pentagon on this.
They'll talk to us. They'll say, look, we can't talk about the individual cases, that's our policy. And I understand that. What I don't understand, to be honest with you at this point, is here we are 12 years, as I say, after the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Leon Panetta was fantastic, I must say. Secretary of Defense at the time of the repeal said, look, we were so focused on the past and the present, you know, Panetta said, we wanted to think about the future. How are we going to go forward? That we didn't spend enough time on the past and the present. In other words, there are people who paid the price. How do you correct the wrong? Somebody is discharged, as you know, if it's less or other than honorably.
Right.
There are a whole host of benefits they suddenly can't access. Loans, VA care. And there are, you know, this, as you heard in the piece we did. And
right.
The only one. You can't work. He can't work as a police dispatcher. Why? Because he's a felon.
He's a felon. He's a felon for being gay. And Jim, you know, this is not an isolated incident of the military being stuck in the past. I mean, we come across this on this program all the time, where there are 100-year laws still in effect that deny certain benefits that should, just crazy stuff.
And, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
In 2023, isn't it a matter of a couple of keystrokes on a computer to update somebody's record?
Right.
But how you're talking about providing justice, a sense of justice to somebody who was persecuted for their sexuality. Isn't it the obligation of the military to take the time to hit the computer 3 or 4 times or whatever they need to do and update somebody's record so that they can get what they have earned by serving this country?
It's ridiculous. But you know, Jim, you think about the burn pit issue that just happened. Yeah. I mean, so many things that people, you know, you hear all the time about veterans that have filed benefits for something that happened to them in the military and they die before anything ever happens.
That's right.
And
more will die here in this case. I guess the thing that's so enraging is it is so easy to fix. It's a matter of will. So let me just, I know I'm saying something I've said already, but I just want to lay it out because it's the controlling principle at the heart of all of our reporting is the military's inability to address this injustice, lingering homophobia or bureaucratic inertia.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Well said. And you know, the other thing about, this guy you interviewed is, you know, he should be coming back a hero. And I just wondered when I was watching the piece, how much guilt does he feel?
Well, you know, I think there's a sense here he was reluctant to go on camera at first because I think he feels like, look, this is 30 years ago.
Right.
I put my life back together. Why do I need to open this up? And why do I need to relive the trauma? And he has such a conviction that nothing will change. He is so sure. And why shouldn't he? Why shouldn't he
feel
that way?
Right.
That nothing will change. So even afterwards, we had some communication with him and he said, you know, thank you for telling my story, but I'm not very optimistic anything's going to change. And everybody feels that way. You know, there's a point to this that, again, Rachel Van Landingham made in our story, which is it actually, when you foster an environment like this, where people who have, you know, a certain orientation don't go to apply for jobs, we are making ourselves less safe as a country.
Right. Yes, you have absolutely.
The people most qualified to do something, who cares who they love?
Right.
Who cares who they spend their lives with and make homes with? If they are the best at what they do, and consequently that's going to make us a safer country, then don't we have an obligation to create an environment where they will feel comfortable serving? And so these are all questions that I want to ask somebody, the appropriate person at the
right.
Pentagon. And yet, you know, we can't so far to date, we haven't been able to get anybody to say, you know what, come on in, let's talk about this stuff.
You know,
I can tell you, we're not going to be stopping.
Well, and that's what I love about your reporting. I mean, you can tell you're passionate about this. You've got a dogged determination, and those are the things. And thank you for being that way and doing this investigation, because I think, you know, the thing that you said, what would make Steve come back and 30 years later open himself up to this again, it's the same thing that made Steve enlist in the military in the first place. He wants to serve his country.
I was the first reporter at Saddam Hussein Airport in 2003 as the 3rd Infantry took the 1st Brigade of the 3rd Infantry took the airport. It was an honor, a privilege to be embedded with them. And, wow. And I had never seen anything like that before. Watch how the men and women of the 1st Brigade of the 3rd Infantry did their business. It was stunning and it was compelling. And I had my eyes opened. I was in the last Humvee that was out of Iraq in 2011. So
wow.
It was these, I had this bookend experience of watching the men and women of the United States military do their jobs. And so I've carried that admiration and sense of gratitude with me through my reporting career. And so when this came across our desk, it was like, well, hang on a second. Whoa.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Yeah.
And I we had to go through it over and over to make sure that this really, like, because it's not talked about, it should be understood more broadly, more widely that, and maybe, you know, this is one of those instances, maybe if you shine the light a little bit,
right,
then people are like, because like, listen to your reaction. You had no idea.
Oh, everybody I talked to this week about this story had no idea.
Right.
You know, and I'm so glad that you had that context too of the experience in Iraq, because we say this all the time on this program. When you're in a foxhole and the enemy's trying to kill you and your buddy's trying to save you, do you ask him, are you gay?
Right. 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 If I gave you a legal pad and said, write 10,000 questions you're going to ask the person next to you in a situation like that, I don't think it would make it. Because
no.
Who cares?
Right.
Are you a good soldier? Are you well trained? Do you know how to use the weapon?
Right.
Do you have courage? Like all of those things. But I don't think you really care. And that, again, is something that I get it. I understand, like, we've evolved as a culture, but it's 2023.
Right.
It's not 1970. Like
right.
we a long time ago. I mean, don't ask, don't tell was repealed as the law of the land
right.
more than a decade ago. So what are we waiting for to update the system and update the way the military functions and update the commands that the leaders
yes.
give and get? to make sure that these things happen.
Yeah, because in the military, it's, as you know, Jim, it's one follow, all follow. And so, yeah, you know, who's going to be that shining light? Who's going to be the person who raises their hand and asks that question while you're in the military? Because you can't. And
I was in a command and control tent in the Iraqi desert in April of 2003. And there was a crazy sandstorm, Shamal, that came in, and you couldn't see your hand in front of you. You couldn't see your hand in front of you. That's how thick the sand was.
Wow.
And inside this command and control tent, the men and women of the 1st Brigade of the 3rd Infantry were still conducting the war. They were sending artillery right down the guns of what the Iraqis were sending the United States way. And I just remember thinking to myself, I mean, I didn't grow up in a time and a place where I understood how the military functioned. So this was my first time watching it. I said, wait a minute, they're still able to prosecute war when I can't see my hand in front of me.
Right. Right.
So if they're able to do that, the most sophisticated, technologically advanced, capable of conducting a battle in those, you're telling me we can't update some records?
You know, and this,
I don't get it.
The other sad part, Jim, is we talked to a World War II historian the other day, and we talked about how at the beginning of World War II, and I didn't know a lot of this, but our army was small. It was tiny. And, you know, when FDR asked every American to jump in, Where did that spirit go? I mean, everybody was a part of the war effort. Everybody was a part of the military in their own way. And so now you have situations like this that people can't even see what's happening.
Well, so if it's bureaucratic inertia that's preventing the updating of the records and the discharges, that's a problem. Yep. Because you can't, that's unable to function. Okay. But if it's lingering homophobia,
right,
that is a far more serious issue. And that's when you need to begin to ask questions about, well, wait a minute, what's leadership? What are we, is the military going to lead in terms of our cultural evolution?
Right.
In terms of equality and civil rights and doing the right thing and acting in a way that reflects the law of the land? Because it feels like this is a golden opportunity to demonstrate,
yes,
your capacity to lead. And so this isn't even a controversial thing anymore. All anybody's asking for is to have their, what they have earned in a post don't ask, don't tell world, not last week, but, you know, more than a decade ago, the updating, to have the military say, if it is lingering homophobia, we are going to stamp that out right now and have a military that reflects the degree of cultural evolution that we have achieved in this country.
Well, and as you reported on in your piece too, how about just an apology? How about an apology?
Oh my goodness, Randy, that's like, you know, you think you're, these things matter. So
yeah,
you sit and talk to these men and women who are heartbroken, who are crushed, who have given up, or, you know, we talked to a guy who had been drummed out of the Marines, and then he got his discharge upgraded, and he was walking on air, and he could go to the credit union and open accounts and all of, and he said, you know, it's the greatest thing that has happened to me. It's so affirming. But the process, why should everybody, every vet who has been given a substandard discharge and is unable to access benefits they earn, why do they need a lawyer? Why does it so complicated that they have to fight for it? Why can't they have their, why, as Rachel Van Lanningham suggested, let's turn the presumption upside down. Let's presume that they were treated bad and improperly treated, and that if the military wants to prove why that's not the case, fine, do that. Otherwise, the assumption should be that they've been mistreated. These veterans who've been persecuted for their sexuality, they should have everything restored. And if the military has a problem with that, then present the evidence as to why they should still have an other than honorable discharge and access to benefits.
I love that. And, you know, it's to the point now where every veteran support organization has a team of service officers that have to dissect all of the VA and go through there and do that for you, because they presume you can't get it done, and you can't.
I couldn't agree more. The despair and the heartache that is still in place long after it should have been addressed is heartbreaking to me. You know, I got to be honest with you. I take very seriously the obligation of a reporter to try to present an objective rendering of any particular story. But that doesn't mean that both sides are right, or both sides. You can again, we don't have the other side because the military is not talking to us.
Right.
But our obligation here, you know, is not to report both sides. You know, that old saying that as a reporter, you don't report one person says it's raining and the other person says it's not. Your job as a reporter is to stick your head outside the window and tell you if you get wet.
Right.
So that's kind of how I feel about this one. I'm not taking some detached sense of objective, well, on one hand and the other hand. We've looked into this. We've investigated. This is happening. People have been unjustly persecuted for their sexuality. And if it was the law of the land at the time and it's not anymore, you got to do something about that. And if you're not going to do something about that, you have an obligation to explain yourselves to the people of the United States military and the people of the United States of America why you are not going to find it important enough and make it a high enough priority to address past wrongs.
Jim Axelrod, you are the best, man. Thank you so much for staying on this. So appreciate your reporting on everything, but especially something like this. And if you, I would imagine it's probably on CBS News website as well.
It is. We have a great, I want to do a shout out. The producer, the young producer who's been driving all of this is a woman by the name of Jessica Kigo. She's a fantastic journalist. She has been all over this story. It's a team effort. And I can tell you, both of us are committed to staying on this until finally someone can explain to us why so many people's suffering has not been addressed. I promise you that.
Absolutely. And you know, it's I worked for the VFW for 10 years, and I can tell you also that that's a big ship to turn around. I mean, everything that we've talked about today, whether it's benefits, whether it's a service record, anything like that, it's hard to take that old line thinking and turn that around. And I saw it firsthand at the VFW. And So if it's within those organizations, number one, it's pervasive all throughout the military, as we know. So, but Jim, thanks again, man. Thank you so much for the time, too.
Randy, thank you. I am so grateful that you would help us amplify and emphasize this. And please let me come back and give you some updates.
I was just going to ask you. That'd be fantastic.
Terrific.
Thank you. We'll be right back here in the National Defense.